Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben and his friend Gunning. That was Chris Bassett after an impressive performance through what, I mean, should be considered now. Like, we do the, like, goals adjusted by era thing in the NHL.
Sure.
Pitches adjusted by era.
500.
He threw a million pitches yesterday.
Might still be throwing them.
I mean, how often... I need someone. I should actually email Sportsnet Stats. They might be getting sick of my emails.
Felon!
Yeah. They might be getting irritated because I do email them.
It's their job, man.
Every so often.
I feel guilty doing it, but you should continue
to. Yeah. I mean, how many times last season did a starter throw 100 pitches, complete an inning, and then come back and start the next inning? Like, I feel like it's single-digit times. Maybe that's extreme, but like, it's not 100 times.
Certainly not.
Each team plays 162 games.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's probably a very, very small part of a starter equation.
Yeah,
is right. The ability to do that. And it comes after John Schneider was booed after removing Jose Berríos from a game in which he had thrown over 100 pitches. And we're like, yeah, that makes fine. Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. That's fine. Blue Jays score 5 runs in consecutive games at home as they are unbeaten. And, you know, all things are relative. So for the Blue Jays, the offense, like, mm-hmm. It feels like an offensive explosion. 22 hits and 10 runs in 2 games. Also, you know, last year, relative failure for the Blue Jays, winning 89 games, getting into the postseason, and not winning a postseason game. May I direct your attention to the Seattle Mariners, who, of course, beat the Blue Jays in a postseason series just a couple of years ago.
I recall.
But them getting into that postseason was their first postseason appearance in more than 20 years, right? Subsequently, they won... one fewer game than the Blue Jays did last year. They only won 88. They missed the postseason. And here they are again. They entered this series with the exact same record as the Blue Jays at 4-6. And it's early days, but now with 2 losses in the first 2 games of this series, find themselves at 4-8. And yeah, the Astros are also 4-8, but I think people have fewer question marks around the Astros than they do about the Mariners. Mariners fans... rightly, mm-hmm. are freaking out. And this after their general manager said, we're just in it to win like a certain percentage of games, not to win championships.
Yeah, I mean, the guy you saw in this series already in Castillo, I mean, he was nails in that playoff game a couple of years ago, but it has not been that guy for them this year. I don't think he's going to fall off the face of the earth, but we know starting pitching is, you know, consistency in baseball is basically an impossibility day to day, but even like starting pitching, it's a similar conversation to one we're having about the Blue Jays. The idea that a little bit of diminishing return from each one of those guys, mm-hmm. can really, really hamper the effects of your season. And thankfully, we haven't seen that with the Blue Jays thus far, and you are seeing that in Seattle.
Yeah, and they need Julio Rodriguez to figure it out. It's early days.
That would help.
Yeah. Bo Bichette seemingly figuring it out for the Blue Jays early on this season. Let's talk to Dan Shulman, voice of the Blue Jays. How's it going, Dan?
Good. I'm a little worried about you. There was a very reactive tweet from you yesterday, and I wanted to make sure you're okay.
Honestly, I don't remember what it was. What was
I know, because there are so many reactive tweets from you.
Oh, what? Now, John Schneider going to let everybody throw 200 pitches so he doesn't
That's
get booed?
The one. That's
that was in jest, Dan. That was in jest.
Maybe.
No, the smiley emoji didn't make it onto my head.
Okay, so I raised.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Dan. All right. Yeah. To that point, how many times do you think it happened last season? And I'm going to endeavor to find out the answer from our great people at Sportsnet Stats today. But like, how many times do you think last season a starter threw 100 pitches, completed an inning, and then started the next inning?
Yeah, probably not many. And Buck and I don't think we didn't say it on the air, but like when he walked off the mound after the 6 innings. And we went into the break, I filled out my scorecard, like 6 innings, 5 hits, whatever it was, 1 run, 8 strikeout. Like, I thought he was done. And I guess lesson to me, like, wait until the move is made before filling out your scorecard. But obviously he said after the game, he felt great. And I think, I heard Schneider and Bassett on the drive home. I heard the stuff, you know, on Blair and Bart on the Jays talk. And I can't remember which one of them said, but obviously they were a little thin in the bullpen, and I think that had something to do with it as well. And maybe Schneider said to Bassett, hey, like, we don't have Jimmy Garcia tonight. Can you give us 2 more outs or 3 more outs? But I was surprised, 115 pitches is the most thrown by any starter in baseball. We're only 10, 11 days into the season, whatever it is. But yeah, I was surprised, but he did a great job. I mean, you know, he walked a few guys early and he didn't look quite right the first two or three innings. And then he just got better and better as the night went along.
Yeah, he did. And I think that has to, at least for me, factor into the equation as well. You know, you got to deal with the person that's out there as well as on top of the athlete. And I think that with Bassett, I mean, you know, we talk about all these different starting pitchers. They're all a little bit different. I mean, Bassett is the guy who does it the most with guile and spit and know-how and, you know, grit.
Not spit. That's illegal.
Oh, you're right. Not spit. I can't say that one in baseball. That's a bad one. You're right. But you understand the point I'm making. I wonder what element of it for Schneider. And again, I think the things we've already listed are more prevalent in this conversation, but I wonder what element of it is. Again, you heard Bassett saying he's not been happy with two of his three starts. How much of it do you think there was some element of wanting to let him kind of battle through it and stamp home the great start that he did have? Again, I don't think it's the prevailing reason, but I wonder if that kind of entered the equation as well.
It might have. I think there's a lot of trust with Bassett. I think if Chris Bassett looks Pete Walker or John Schneider in the eyes and says, I'm good, I think that's good enough for them. I don't think they need to follow up and follow up and follow up. I think he might be number one on the staff in terms of that trust factor. So, you know, he's been around a long time and he's not going to jeopardize himself. And I don't think he would have said he could have gone out there if he didn't think he could go out there again. So, I mean, even if he had finished after six, like we all thought he
would. Yeah, it's a great start.
Yeah, I think it's a great start. That puts a stamp on it and kind of puts the other two in the rearview mirror anyway. So, but I think it was just a combination of how he was feeling, how he was doing, and the fact that they were a little thin in the pen.
Yeah, also bizarre that earlier in that game, in that start, he was in conversation with the trainer and Pete Walker and John Schneider. I have to go to bed like immediately following the game, so I didn't see any, did you see anything as to why or what was happening during that conversation? That was a weird one.
No, I didn't see anything. It'll be a question I ask when I get down there today. And you know, Buck made the point, he's exactly right. Like, it could have been an upset stomach. It could have been a headache. Like, we don't know, right?
So, all flu game.
Who knows? Yeah. But whenever you see starting pitcher, trainer, pitching coach, and manager all standing in the same place, you know, they're obviously having a conversation about something. But again, if Chris Bassett said, yeah, I'm good, then he was good. If it was something that warranted him coming out of the game, I'm sure it would have. So, but whatever it was, it sure didn't seem like it was bothering him late. And what I was impressed with, and he's not a velocity guy. Like, he's definitely a location change speed guy. We all know that. But he hit 94 and even 95 a few times with his fastball later in the game, like fifth, sixth inning. So, you know, Seattle's not the 27 Yankees. We know that. But they've got some dangerous hitters, and I thought it was a great performance.
Yeah, they're supposed to be better than this, though. They do have a great starting staff. And, boy, you looked at the pitching matchups, despite the inflated ERA that Luis Castillo had, and you're like, oh, this Blue Jays team, the way they've swung the bats coming into the series, that's going to be a tough test. And they've only scored 5 runs a game, but 22 hits in the first two games. What have you thought of the offense since they've gotten home?
Much better. And like 5 runs a game would be great. If they scored 5 runs a game for the rest of the season, they'd have a great season. So, you know, the first 10 games or so, they scored 8 or more 3 times, but 3 or fewer 7 times. So, and it's really hard to win games 2-1, 3-2, that sort of thing. So I thought, you know, 5 runs and double digit hits 2 nights in a row was great. I think they drew a bunch of walks in the first game, which has been a strength of theirs this year. They just haven't capitalized, but I know they had 4 hits with runners in scoring position in the first game. And last night, and I don't know if you were watching at this point in time, especially I think it was in the third inning, the Springer inning, the foul balls. Like, it was, and it's the first thing I'm going to ask George about. Like, that's got to be as gratifying, rewarding, and at bat as a guy can have. You know, George Kirby's got really good stuff, and George Springer fouled off 8 consecutive pitches in that at bat. So obviously the last 6 were in a 2-strike count, and he's just extending the at bat. Poor old Dalton Varsho's running to second every time and getting worn out on the play. And then George pays it off by getting a base hit. And I think they fouled off 16 pitches in that inning. And that's not who we, you know, that's not what we associate them with them being, you know, a lot. But I thought that George Springer at-bat was the most important at-bat of the game, one of the most important at-bats they've had of the season. I thought it was great. And, you know, every night's different. Sometimes you get the hit with men on base, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you chase, sometimes you don't. But last night the theme to me was just prolonging at-bats and and making it very, very difficult on George Kirby in the first few innings.
Yeah, you see that in spades. And, you know, not that Springer wouldn't have felt gratified with that at bat, regardless with the way it finished, but the fact that Bo, you know, brings him home later on in the inning, like, it does just, it stamps home the message that you, or the message you're looking to take out of it. You know, you mentioned Varsho there. Obviously, a lot's been made of his place in the lineup. He's batting ninth last night, but, you know, comes through with the hit when they need it, finds himself on base in other instances. What do you make of the way they're using him? I mean, easy enough last night, Kiermaier gets the day off, you pop him over to center, and Schneider comes in to left. What do you think, or maybe this is a better way to phrase it, do you think there has been a slight change, or a change, even a slight one, in the plan for Varsho this year already?
Yeah, I think this is a fluid situation for everybody. Like, you know, going back to the spring, and I off the top of my head, I think opening day, I think Varsho was fifth.
Yeah,
Kiermaier was seventh and Biggio was ninth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we all do it. You guys do it. I do it. Fans do it. Everybody does it. We spent a lot of time talking about the opening day roster, the opening day lineup, and the order of the rotation. And then 2 weeks in, like, everything has changed because that's the way baseball works. So what I think they're doing is responding to, you know, to how guys are playing, right? So you hit more, you move up in the lineup. You hit less, you move down, or you sit every now and again. So I think it's fine. I think Varsho's fine with it. Like, everybody understands. And, you know, the flip side of the coin is look where Biggio is right now. He's hitting fifth unless Schneider's in there, and then he's hitting sixth. And that's because he's earned the right to do it because he's having good at bat. So I think what they're doing, you know, you've got Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, obviously 1, 2, 3, 4. They are mainstays. Yes, Springer and Turner will get the odd day off, but those guys, more often than not, are 1 through 4. And then everybody else, Schneider, Biggio, Kiner, Falefa, Varsho, Kiermaier, Clement, those six guys, usually 4 of them are in the lineup on any given night. And what they're doing is a combination of hot hand and matchups. And that's how they decide who's in the lineup. And the nice thing, and Buck and I talked about it last night, is if you're one of the two guys in that group who's not in the game, chances are you're getting in at some point. So I think they're keeping guys fresh, but they're also preventing them from getting rusty. And it's the kind of team this year where they have to play the hot hand and play the matchup. So if a guy's got a great high fastball and a certain hitter's not good against a high fastball, he probably doesn't play. But I don't think they want guys to sit for too long either. So I think right now they're kind of getting in a groove, figuring out who they are as a team, and then trying to, you know, set the batting order appropriately every day.
You mentioned the idea of keeping guys fresh, keeping them engaged. I think the person, at least when it comes to keeping them fresh, that it's going to be the trickiest dance with is Justin Turner. I mean, he started out the season one way in Boston. Now, he was hurt at the end of it, but it also ended different. You want to make sure there's some tread on the tires by the time the season, you know, gets to September. How much do you think they have, again, just like with Varsho, kind of altered their plan there? There was talk of 10 days in the field. We've already seen a couple of them this year. How do you think they'll balance the idea of putting their best offensive lineup forward, which may very well need Justin Turner to play the field to do it, versus kind of keeping him fresh and having this version of Turner for, you know, August, September?
Right. So, you know, the better guys like Kiner, Falefa, and Biggio, and even Varsho and Clement, the better those guys hit, then probably the less likely they are to put Justin Turner at third base. I don't think we've seen Turner at first base, right? I think
no, Vladdy's
played every
Not
day.
Yet, no.
Right. And that could happen today, right? Day game after night game kind of thing. So you're right. It is a balance. It's defense comes into the equation. Offense comes into the equation. Rest comes into the equation. Who's pitching for the Blue Jays comes into the equation. There are certain pitchers that they deem to be more ground ball guys, and you're more likely to see Clement or Kiner Falefa at third base. But if it's a strikeout guy or a fly ball guy, like if it's Kikuchi or Gausman, I think you're more likely, Turner is more likely to be a third base with those guys on the mound than he is maybe with Berríos or Bassett. Also, the Turner rest thing is kind of connected to the Springer rest thing. So I think it was Sunday, I believe, Turner didn't start. So Springer was DHing. Again, day game after night game. Now, 1 o'clock after 7 o'clock. Today's 3 o'clock after 7 o'clock. But if Springer's DHing, then either, assuming Vladdy's at first, then Turner's either at third or he's not in the lineup. So he was not in the starting lineup on Sunday. So, again, nothing is in isolation. I know, and I'm guilty of it, too. Why isn't X doing this with Y? Well, because ABCDE is also a part of this conversation. So I actually think they're doing a nice job. Again, they're still figuring out who they are, right? You know, how much is Kiner Falefa going to hit? And by the way, he's hitting .313 right now. Like, so he's just getting his hits, right? I mean, is he going to hit 18 home runs this year? Probably not. But he's getting his hits right now, and we all know he's a good defender. So they're figuring out who they are. You know, Davis Schneider's a big part of the equation because they can bounce guys all over the field. There's a number of different ways they can do it, and I still think they're learning about themselves and evolving. And I think they're doing a nice job balancing offense, defense, rest, rust, all those sort of things.
Yeah, it is. It does feel like a very fluid lineup on a day-to-day basis. So this afternoon starter, Yusei Kikuchi, I think when you evaluate, hey, how, you know, there was a belief, especially the front office espoused this explicitly, that they believed there was internal improvements that could make this Blue Jays offense a lot better than the one a season ago. But yeah, that was countered with, well, man, look how healthy and how great that rotation was a season ago. Can they replicate that? And Yusei Kikuchi, at the age of 32, had a career-best season. Could he replicate that? And boy, it feels like, Dan, and I want your opinion on this, it feels like the pitch clock made all the difference in the world, that this is now the Yusei Kikuchi we can expect. Like, I think this is real, what we've seen now for more than a year.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the first start this year did worry me a little bit. It was a high pitch count game, and his command wasn't very good. I always get a little bit worried about his command, you know, if he starts spraying the fastball. And it wasn't terrible. He walked 3 4⅓. I mean, it's not great, but it's not terrible. But then he was terrific against the Yankees. I thought just terrific. And that was a big game. And so, yeah, I think they've got a pretty good idea of what they have, and I think they are very confident in them. Like, sometimes you see, you know, we all see the sound bites and the stuff that's said into the cameras, and then, but sometimes I, you know, wander up to somebody privately and say, so, you know, when you ask a follow-up question, just kind of you and me, and everybody really, really believes that he has turned a corner here. And I mean, he was really good last year. Like, he didn't turn a corner for the last six starts of the season or anything like that. Yeah. He was pretty consistent. What he is not going to be is a 7-8 inning guy. He does throw too many pitches for that, unless things are drastically going to change. You know, like Berríos, Bassett can get outs on a couple of pitches, right? Like, get ahead 0-1, get a ground ball. Gausman can strike you out in 3 or 4 pitches. Kikuchi, it's a lot of 2-2 counts and high pitch counts. So I think he's going to be a 5-6 inning guy, which is going to put a little bit extra of a burden on the bullpen. But that's what he was last year. Mm-hmm. And I think if you asked anybody, how do you feel about Yusei Kikuchi last year, they'd say, great. Like, we'd sign up for the same thing in a heartbeat right now for 2024. So I think they're in a good spot. I think the rotation is going to be fine. If they can duplicate last night's numbers, as you said, that's a big ask. But if they can get 90% of the way there, that's pretty good. And I think we all hope to get more out of the fifth spot this year than they got last year, whatever that means, whoever that is, we don't know. So, you know, hopefully on balance, if the fifth spot is better, then maybe the rotation overall is just as good. And if there is internal improvement in the offense, then that's the pathway I see to them winning a few more games this year.
Yeah. And boy, it's only two games, but it feels like those two victories and the offense looking the way it did in those two games against the Mariners. At least I can tell you from my perspective, as far as my Twitter mentions are concerned, it's much better today, Dan. Like, I went to the thing with the food tasting and like everything great, showing people the new ballpark before it opened. And like, I'm just tweeting it like just nice pictures of a baseball stadium and just horrible, horrible replies in my mentions. It feels like, you know, like maybe a pressure release has happened the last 2 days.
You know what? I was afraid on Monday when the eclipse happened that it just might never uneclipse. And I see it too. I would guess I don't look at mentions as much as you look at mentions, but I see it too. Obviously. And, you know, again, we should all remember that that is not necessarily representative of the population as a whole. I'll tell you, the people I meet in Dunedin, it's the opposite. I've never met happier, more positive Blue Jays fans in the world than the folks who travel down to Dunedin from wherever they come from in Canada to go see games. But you're right. And you know, I don't follow the Leafs or Raptors as closely as the Blue Jays, obviously, because I work on this every day. But it seems like the emotional roller coaster, the everyday nature of baseball, you know, you lose one game, the sky is falling, you win a couple of games, hey, I can see the light again. And it's, I get it. I totally get it. Like, I saw my dad do this for years and years and years, where he couldn't stop watching, even if he wanted to. He loved them so much. If they lost a couple of games, why don't they do this? How could this be happening? And then I'd get a call the next morning and say, boy, the guys looked great last night. You know, I mean, it's, and this is how people are, and God love them for it, because that's the reason the team is so popular and we all have jobs, right? So it's wonderful. But there are going to be all kinds of ups and downs, and they play in a tough division, et cetera, et cetera. But they've played well the last couple of days. They've hit well. They've pitched well. They've made some good defensive plays. I don't remember a bad defensive play the last couple of nights. Maybe I'm missing one. But Buck and I were talking about Red Stars two nights ago. We each had four or five in our scorebook. They've just played a crisp brand of baseball the last couple of days. And, you know, it's not an excuse, but you start with Tampa, Houston, New York. That's a tough way to start. So how are you going to win 90 games? You got to beat up on the teams you're supposed to beat. So do well against Seattle. Hopefully do well against – you got to do well against Colorado, because then the Yankees are coming in after that, right? So it's been a good couple of days, but as you said, Ben, things can change quickly, and let's hope they keep trending in a positive direction.
Yeah, nothing worth doing is easy. Anyways, so Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
You too. Dan Schulman, voice of the Blue Jays, getting set for an afternoon game down at the ballpark. Blue Jays and Mariners wrapping up their three-game series before an off day tomorrow.
I want to pick up on what he said there about the just, like, nature of sports and how baseball – like, baseball is the ultimate you live by it or you die by it. Because I'm sitting here listening to him lay out that argument of, unlike the Leafs or Raptors, it's like you got to get right back in it. Boy, feels like 100 years sometimes between, like, if the Leafs lose on a Monday and they don't play again until Thursday, we might as well have 800 news cycles. And now, again, at least in baseball, now sometimes you get a chance to go out there and it's just doubling down on more of the same, and it ratchets up, and that's what I think he's lending itself to. But it is interesting that, like, you do get a chance to reset the conversation every day as opposed to those other sports. I mean, football obviously is the complete opposite of this, where there's just once a week, and that's why it has so much import. But, yeah, it's I don't know what you prefer. Like, if you're a good team, obviously you prefer, let me get out there and rectify this. But if it's a bad team, the, like, lingering thought of it every day.
I mean, it's Wednesday today.
Yeah.
Sunday night, it was, this is the worst team I've ever seen. Like, they're never going to score another run. Like, this is the worst offense in baseball. Here come 150 losses. Mm-hmm. Like,
I recall.
And a couple of wins against the Mariners, 22 hits. And Dan's right to say that, five runs a game obviously makes them, like, the best offense in the history of baseball.
Yeah, the Dodgers. Yeah.
No, but it, I'm just, as a whole, considering the way it feels, like, it feels like they scored more than five runs. Like, five runs is not an offensive explosion. It's a great, great offensive game. But considering where this team was in the Bronx, and it should be said, in terrible weather, returning home to the cozy confines of a closed Rogers Center, although, like, weather is, like, close enough. I mean, there's no conversation about them opening the roof today, right? Like, it's 17 degrees, so 3 o'clock. They can't do it because they have to test it. And
I don't know.
I don't normally
look at the forecast, but I did for whatever reason this morning. And I was shocked at how warm it's supposed to be.
Yeah. So I don't know. Probably roof closed.
I would imagine.
All right. When we come back,
I'd bring back that Donaldson roof report. It's open. It's closed. It's a good bit. I got to be honest. Good job, Game Ops, on that one.
Yeah. He's available. How about do it live every day?
Let's do it live.
All right. When we come back, Luke Fox. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk to Luke Fox, Sportsnet Leafs reporter. How's it going, Luke?
It's going okay. I like how Brent points out the one breakdown.
I know. No,
the here's game where the Leafs just cruise through another team. Everything's going well. He's pointing out the one goal against.
Well, here's what it is, Luke, because I yesterday took to the mic with my impassioned defense for my sweet boy, Simone Benoit, saying, how dare anyone think he'd be on the outside looking in? They've been the shutdown pair all season long. I still believe all this. It was just a bad look. And, like, you know, I know they're not thinking about me when they blew their assignment there, but it's like I rode so hard for the pair on yesterday's show to have the game start like that. It was just not ideal for me. But, yeah, that's not the thing I pull out most, but like all things in life, I do think about me being right more often than not. So they kind of did me dirty there, Luke.
Well, it is interesting, right? Like, who's going to be the quote unquote shutdown pair? Like, who's going to, I mean, even though Sheldon Keefe says he doesn't have one in the traditional sense, someone's going to have to go against the Panthers' best lines, right? So it is a topic of conversation, especially with the unknown of when Liljegren's going to get back in time and how that adjusts which six defensemen they play.
It's not the number one topic of conversation with four games remaining. It's can Austin Matthews score four more goals? And let me take you back to March 19th. After the Maple Leafs lost 4-3 in Philadelphia to the Flyers, Austin Matthews was sitting on 55 goals with 15 games to go. And I'll just tell you what I was thinking. I was like, well, that was fun. Like, it's not likely to happen now. We're probably looking at, you know, low mid 60s total. The 70 goal mark, that's just, it's unfair to ask from this guy. Here we are now, four in four is all he needs after 11 in his last 11. What were you thinking in the middle of March?
Yeah, I think I was kind of doubting it. I mean, I've been keeping track of the pace just because it's so fascinating, right? I think I started looking at this around Christmas time because it's like, oh, this seems like it could be doable. And, you know, there's been some dips and there's been some surges, of course, like, you know, a ridiculous amount of hat tricks this season. But now we're down to 4-4. This is a guy that got 4-1, his first one. So it's totally doable. It's totally doable right now. And the thing about it is, it's not just doable. He wants it. You can tell he wants it. And everyone around him wants it. Like, the team has rallied around this. We've been talking for a while about how there's not much meaning to these games, especially when you're playing, you know, the New Jersey Devils twice in 1 week without Jack Hughes and just, some of these teams are tough to watch as they play with the string here. So you're looking for meaning within that. And yeah, you want to do what the coach says, sharpen up your details and have, you know, quick shifts and get into the playoff rhythm. But really, everyone around Matthews in that dressing room is rallying around 70. They want to be part of it. And it's cool. It's cool to be part of something that hasn't happened since the 90s, right? Since a lot of these guys were even born. So, you know, if you're a fringe player and then, you know, whether you win a cup or not, you can always say after you retired, yeah, I was on that team. I fed him a pass, or I got a secondary assist on that year. Austin Matthews hit 70. Like, I don't know. Sports are supposed to be fun, and this is something fun for the next few days. And of course, the conversation is going to switch to, can they win a round again, and how deep will they go, and what are the deep pairs, and is Samsonov really ready? All those conversations are going to happen. But for the next four games, how can, as a sports fan, how can you not get on board with this?
So are we sure it's going to be four games? I mean, I'm positive the Leafs will play that many. I don't think the NHL is just going to go, you know what, don't worry about it. Just skip that back-to-back. No, I know they're going to. Are we positive he is? It seems like the tenor around Keefe, and this was a week ago when it was, okay, yeah, if he rips off a goal a game for 10 more games, then we'll have this conversation. Well, all he's done between now and then is do that. It does feel like there's been a little bit of switch in the tenor, and I don't know, maybe it's just that you creep closer and closer to this thing. The players want it more. But do you think, and look, he's the head coach, he can do what they want, they're all big boys, but do you think Sheldon Keefe can really sit him down in game 81 if he's sitting on 68 or 69 or for game 82? Like, if the players want it so bad and he wants it so bad, you're not gonna have a mutiny or anything if he goes against what the room wants, but how much do you have to take that into account as well?
I think you really do. And you know, I hear the other side, like, oh, you know, you got to do some load management. And absolutely, like, if the Leafs play game one next, like a week Saturday, there isn't going to be a ton of time between their final regular season game and their first playoff game. And that, fair enough. But this is a 26-year-old who plays a smart game, who doesn't, you know, it's not like he's getting in dangerous areas or contact. He's usually floating around the outside looking for his shots. You know, he's a smart guy. It's not like he plays a really risky game. He's not Andre Kasha out there. So to bubble wrap him for one game, if he's at 68 with two to go or 69 with one to go, I think it actually would be a detriment. I think it could deflate the room. Like, oh, we're not doing this anymore all of a sudden? I understand it, right? Load management, all this stuff. It's become very trendy right now. But I think there's been load management by Keith in these games. He's been under 20 minutes for a bunch of games in the last, you know, 3-4 weeks. And that was something that wasn't happening early in the season. So I think that's where we're seeing the load management. And I wouldn't have the guts, as if I were head coach of the Leafs, to go in there and say, I know we only got one more game, but we're resting the guy that you all want to see get 70. At least give him a shot to do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just think that if that's the case, Sheldon Keefe is a liar. Because, like, he told us that this doesn't matter as much as getting him ready for the postseason. And we know in his history, he's done this before. Auston Matthews got 60 in game 81. And guess what? Sitting down for game 82. We know he likes to do this with his star players last game of the season. We know, given his druthers, he wants to sit Auston Matthews in game 82. I think it's the right move to let him try and score his 70th. But if he does it, he's going counter to what he told us.
Well, and it would be the first time a head coach deceived the media.
No,
right?
I know. It's fine. It's fine. He's just a liar. He's just a liar is all.
No. I'm sure. No, you know what he does. He wants him to get it over with so he can
of
get
Of course.
Both.
Yeah. Score four tomorrow. That's fine.
Yeah. But I did find it interesting that he didn't. Like, they're not going above and beyond. They want him to get the 70, but they're not, like I said, they're not playing him extra. The Devils pulled the net with down two goals. I thought for sure they were going to find a way to throw Matthews over the boards to try and get him an extra easy one into the empty net that Bertuzzi got. But they didn't do it. So Keith is being pretty strict in, okay, we're happy. We all want him to score goals, but it has to be, it's not going to be at the sacrifice of crazy amounts of ice time. And it's not going to be at the sacrifice of, hey, you can forget your defensive responsibilities. Because that's the other thing, too, here. Matthews has been excellent defensively over the course of what is now a 12-game point streak, a 6-game goal streak. It's really quite phenomenal that he's doing it within the confines of good team structure.
Yeah, that's the thing I keep bringing up in all this. Because not that Auston Matthews' defensive prowess gets understated, but I do sometimes think we have them in completely separate conversations. It's like, he's a tremendous goal scorer. He's an amazing two-way center. The fact that he does both of those at the same time, every shift, that's what makes it, again, like if he was floating at the red line, scoring 66 goals, that would be impressive. But he's doing the exact opposite of that, and that's the thing that keeps kind of jumping out to me. One thing Keith talked about in the post game last night, he got asked about that top line. And I also just want to state, like, I'm with you. I would have liked to have seen him get out there. I'm surprised Bertuzzi didn't try to pass it to him, even though he was on the bench for that empty netter. If you're going to push to get him 70, push to get him 70. But he talked last night about how he felt like that line kind of overcame, I mean, the team as a whole, but specifically that line overcame a bit of a slow start and they managed to find it. And I wondered if that was him, like, forewarning himself. Because we know Keefe has been want to in the past. You have a plan, and then all of a sudden the game script kind of flips and, all right, put the lines that I'm used to back together. I thought it was interesting that he mentioned how well that line was able to overcome a slow start, and if that means Keefe is going to try as best as he can to overcome what I'm sure he ultimately in his heart of hearts wants to do, and that's put Marner back with Matthews.
Yeah, it's really kind of fascinating how this has played out, Gunnar, because this was an accident. Right, like if Mitch Marner doesn't get hurt, this line probably does not exist. Keith had in his mind that he wanted to get Bertuzzi up with Matthews again at some point, You know, it started the season there. There was no chemistry whatsoever. Bertuzzi was a mess for like 5 weeks. Bertuzzi found his game a bit lower in the lineup. Actually, with Tavares, it started to get into it a little bit. And then it was always in the coach's mind, I want to try Bertuzzi with Matthews. And it makes sense, right? Because Bertuzzi's a net front guy, causes chaos, and Matthews is more of a panther that kind of lurks and waits to strike. So you could see how maybe they would complement each other. But the Domi part of the factor, which has been a really positive development, doesn't happen if Marner doesn't go down, I don't think. He kind of stumbled into this. But those three guys, three completely different skill sets, they've really found it. And I like your point about how they didn't have it early, but they stuck with it. Bertuzzi ends up with two. Matthews ends up with one. Domi just keeps piling assists. I think he doesn't even have 10 goals yet. He just gobbles up assists like crazy, most of them primary. And this really works. And if, you know, I think Keith has shown restraint in not breaking it up. And now that we're inching really close to the playoffs, I've always thought, you know, when push came to shove, game one, it's going to be Matthews and Marner back together. And this is kind of experimentation time. But they have such chemistry and such momentum. How do you break this up right now?
No, you can't.
And I think it's a real positive for the team as a whole because, you know, Marner and Tavares haven't quite clicked the way they have in the past. But if that can get going, then all of a sudden you really have something.
Yeah, and especially starting a series off on the road, which it seems like is clear to happen in Florida against the Panthers. You don't control the matchups to be able to roll three lines out like they can. Would be quite a thing. It would be unique in this generation of Leafs hockey. The top three lines no longer include Matthew Nyes, who gets bumped down to the fourth line. He did stand out, though, as a fourth liner yesterday. Talked about like the return of Kelly Yarncroke, and you know if they do want to emphasize the penalty killers with Connor Dewar in there, like who could be the odd man out? Is it possible it's Matthew Nyes?
I don't think so because he hasn't been really healthy scratched all season. There was one game he got sick. There was one game he got sick, and then he was healthy. And he told us he was ready to play, and Keith held him back one extra game because he was just like, you know what, just. We got other bodies. Make sure you're 100%. And then he loved his game after that short rest. But really, he hasn't been on the bubble. He's always been in the mix. I would be surprised to see him out. You know, and it's a shame because every time Nick Robertson pops back in the lineup, he scores a goal. But I still think Keith is reluctant to start him in game one. And I'm a firm believer that you need Ryan Reeves in game one because – You know, you guys know how it is. Puck drops first game of the playoffs, and it's like must-see TV because everyone's trying to send a message and set a tone, and it's really wild. And the series kind of finds its groove later and sinks into itself. But, you don't want to throw a kid like Robertson in that mix when you have the Ryan Reeves option. So I would put your bigger lineup out for game one for sure, and then just watch it play out, you know. Do we need a goal more than we need a hit? Then maybe Robertson comes into the mix later. But I don't see Matthew Nyes. And Keith actually raved about Nyes' game. He drew two penalties. You know, he's gotten a few goals last few games. So I think it's been tough on Nyes. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with him. Just the amount of games. Everyone needs to remember this is a kid who's coming out of a college schedule. All of a sudden, 82 games flying all over the country, it's taxing. He's had to learn a lot about how to manage the workload of the NHL schedule. But in saying that, I think he's a big guy. I think he's a versatile guy, and I think he won't be the odd man out.
Yeah, I'm with you there. It's not to say he can't find himself in that position, depending on how the playoffs go. I think you look at the lines last night, and you know, again, no fault of, well, you know, a little fault of Noah Gregor, but no fault of Nick Robertson's. It's like you just pop Revo onto the fourth line with Nyes, Kampf, and Reeves there, and then if Yarncroke is healthy, you have him, Holmberg, and Nylander, and I just really kind of like the way those lines kind of stack up and click. There seems to be a little more of a question on Liljegren. Where do we have an update on Yarncroke? I just feel like he got hurt and he was eligible to come off on the 8th, and we haven't heard much since then. Do we have much of an update on where he's at right now, Luke?
Well, it's a hand. And the update is on the weekend, I asked Sheldon Keefe about Liljegren and Yarncroc. How confident are you that they're going to get in a regular season game? And he kind of hesitated and said, it's possible, but if it happens, it won't be till one of the final two games. So we're talking next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, they have a back-to-back, Florida and Tampa. So if they squeeze into a game, it's one of those ones. But the way he said it didn't make me feel like it was a sure thing. They haven't even practiced with the team. And usually you see the guys out skating a few times with the whole group before they return to action. Like Edmondson, you know, maybe he comes back Thursday or Saturday. He's been practicing with the team for about a week before that. So the fact that we haven't even seen either of those guys with them makes me a little bit doubtful, to be honest.
Yeah, and is it fair to say that Liljegren, it just seems like such a tougher ask to kind of plop him back in, whereas if I see a game out of Yarncroc and, you know, he seems fine, I'm wholly confident throwing him back in there. That just seems like such a tougher ask, one, of a defenseman, and two, of a younger, less experienced player in Timothy Liljegren. Is that kind of your read on it as well?
Yeah, so like if Yarncroc is good enough to go game one but not game 82, I'd say he's still in, because the coach loves this guy, trusts him defensively. He's an experienced guy who has some, you know, he's got playoff games under his belt. I think the coach would throw him right into the fire. Liljegren, not so much, right? And it's a shame for him if that happens, because it seems like every year they're developing him. Every year he has a stretch where he looks quite promising. And then when the playoffs start, he's in the press box. So from an individual standpoint, it would be disappointing. But when you look team-wide and you look at your sweet boy Benoit there, how do you take him out?
You right? can't. Like you can't do
he's
it.
He's up to speed. He hits everything that moves. You know, he does. He plays a playoff style, right? Straight lines, get the puck out, simple things, you know, try and stuff a cycle, lay the body, like take, you know, have some bruises that are still there for game two. That's kind of Benoit's style. So if Liljegren isn't up to speed, I don't see how you take Benoit out.
But as we all know, you don't need six defensemen. You don't need seven defensemen. You don't need eight defensemen. You don't need, I don't know what the number is. You need like a million defensemen when it comes to the postseason. So perhaps we will see Timothy
Marshall Rafai? Probably not. That feels a little too far.
That would be interesting if that were the case. Although it looked okay in limited duty this season. All right, Luke, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for this.
Okay. Thanks for having me, guys.
Goodbye. Luke Fox, Sportsnet Leafs reporter.
Fine. Okay. Like, guys, thanks for talking to me. Weird. Love Luke. It's weird, though.
You're welcome.
Fine.
You're welcome.
Okay, good. I will say, not that anyone wants to see this, if Marshall Rafai ends up in a playoff game, how many games would they have to play for that many defensemen to get hurt?
That's right.
Although against the Panthers, maybe the answer's too.
Yeah, they all got kneecapped in game like one.
The war crime that is the game one of that series, yes.
Is Mark Giordano the guy that the elicits the most celebration on this team when he scores?
Oh, that's good. Revo is right there, but he's more like a part of it now, so there's not as much sympathy. It's always the double-edged sword of this, is they're only that happy because they're so shocked. Yeah, I was singing to the tune of Old Man River, like, Old Man Gio, on my couch last night when he scored. So, yeah, I mean, for me, definitely the team as well. I think Connor Timmins would get, like, a big pop. It's like he's always around. They're like, wow, you did something. Look at you.
Yeah, but offense is more a part of his game.
Yes, definitely. Though. No, Gio, beloved soldier, been in the league 1,000 years, Woodbridge guy. Yeah, you're right, it does.
Yeah. Him getting
goalie goal, though, that would elicit more pop.
Sure. Oh, yeah, we haven't seen that.
You asked.
We haven't seen that proof of concept. But, yeah. No, Gio is not going to be in, like, boy, unless there's more injuries to come. But Mark Giordano is not going to be in the lineup for game one of the postseason. I don't think it's a nightmare if he gets into a game in the postseason. I think there's a very real possibility that that happens. You're right. The Timothy Liljegren thing, and I think Luke is correct, well, obviously, because he's Luke Fox, when he says that, Timothy Liljegren needs to play in probably, like, even two irrelevant games at the end of the regular season. Is that enough to get him into the lineup for game one? Probably not. Even like in the postseason, right? Like you get a run of injuries. You're throwing Timothy Liljegren. Aren't you like watching that game through your fingers if Timothy Liljegren's playing for the first time this postseason in game three of a playoff series against the Panthers?
Yeah, that is definitely not what you want. I think it is imperative that he gets in a couple of games. And this is just to get his feet wet. It's just to get him back going, because I do like the strides he's made as a player. But, you know, you always talk about the idea of seeing more stuff from the press box. It's like that works when you get popped up there for one game or two games and you get to go back. Mm-hmm. It's been a while for him. So, yeah, it's super disconcerting if that's the situation, the way it plays out.
He very much knows how different the food structure changes in the press box during the postseason. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, it's different. There's different people here as well. Oh, yeah, yeah, I've been up here before.
I don't think it's that different. I feel like it's just pizza and ice cream and popcorn again.
Oh.
Sorry. Just being honest.
Okay.
Remember, boots on the ground. I've been there, okay?
Yeah, I have as well. It didn't go so well in the home game I was there last season. All right, when we come back, it'll be tomorrow. And we'll do another edition of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Fred Gettings, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good morning.